Hi, friend, and welcome to the Unapologetic Entrepreneur Podcast, a place for passionate entrepreneurs just like yourself who are looking to create a business that integrates into your life instead of taking over it. So let me ask you something. How would it feel to unapologetically chase your definition of success? See, I'm on a mission to do this, and I want you to come along with me in becoming an unapologetic entrepreneur. This is someone who has defined success on their terms and is committed to setting boundaries and making progress towards achieving that success. I'm your host, Amanda McKinney, and after several years of entrepreneurship, I found myself chasing someone else's definition of success, and I actually couldn't answer the question, what does success look like for you, Amanda? This started me on a journey to understanding this answer for myself, and I now understand that our definition of success, it evolves over time. But the key is to always know what our definition is in each season of our life. And on this podcast, I am dedicated to exploring how other entrepreneurs have shown up unapologetically and sharing my journey, of course, too. So pop in those earbuds so we can explore topics such as success, goals, mindset, of course, marketing, and money. You will walk away inspired through stories and ready to take action through clearly defined steps. So let's dig in. Hi, friend. Today, I am joined by a powerhouse woman who will inspire you to follow your dreams, as well as giving you the framework to do it. You know I'm all about helping you step into being unapologetic as an entrepreneur, and I'm on a mission to bring on guests to this podcast who do this, and this week's episode is going to deliver just that. My guest today is open about her stories and her struggles in life and in business, and it was through these struggles that she uncovered more of her confidence so she could truly be an unapologetic entrepreneur. My guest today is Renee Bauer. She is an attorney, an international speaker, a podcast host, and an author of, get ready for it, 4 books, including her most recent title that is out now called She Who Wins. She also hosts the annual She Who Wins Summit, a live event created to inspire, motivate, and challenge women to move forward bravely in their personal and business lives. Her impact has been recognized by many magazines and media outlets, and I am excited to have her on the podcast today. We talk about her entrepreneurship journey, as well as how she's navigated self-doubt and tapped into the courage to start not only one, but multiple businesses. And as someone who wears multiple hats, she's an inspiration of how to manage it all and focus on building the business that will help you feel like a winner. But it's her stop, drop, and roll framework that will have you taking action today. So no matter what decision you're facing, her framework is going to help you make a decision and move forward. Plus, she shares something so fun at the end of this episode. It took me a little bit by surprise. It is such a fun idea, and I cannot wait to repay this kindness to someone else. So she is offering something really fun to the first 5 people who respond to her. So if you're listening live, now's your chance. Listen quickly, then go message her on Instagram for sure. So get ready to be inspired and take action. Let's hear from Renee. Renee, thank you so much for being here. I am so thrilled to have you on the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, I love it so much. So I want to dig into all things about confidence and everything that you've written about in your book. But before we do that, tell everyone a little bit about you and how you ended up really getting into this message of empowering women. I just love it.
So I've been a divorce lawyer for 20 years now, and I'm also twice divorced. And I realized when I had gone through those experiences, how much shame I had around it and how much I felt like a failure. And it took me going through that to realize, well, one, if I'm feeling this way, other people must be as well. So I should start sharing my story a little bit and not keeping it inside. And I was actually forced into sharing it. I was on a friend's podcast, and she said to me, she's like, listen, I have a podcast. I'm like, I don't know what a podcast is. And she's like, I'll just bring some sushi over. We'll have a couple drinks. I'm going to clip this mic on you. It's all good. And I'm like, sushi? Okay, I'll talk for sushi. And then she started asking me about my divorce and I started sharing it. And then people started messaging me and saying, thank you for talking so openly and vulnerably about your story. And so that kind of snowballed into, you know, what other issues are women not who are just going through divorce have, but what other things and struggles are we having that we're not talking about? And I started to look at the common theme with the woman who I represented in the divorce space. And there was a lot of confidence issues, a lot of unworthiness issues, a lot of issues around not wanting to have uncomfortable conversations with partners or bosses, sometimes even lawyers. And I realized at that point, I'm like, it's not just about divorce. It's about so much more. It's about taking risks. It's about being bold. It's about having the hard conversations, doing the hard things. And that started my whole journey on She Who Wins, which started first as an event and then turned into a book and turned into multiple events. But it was really about giving women the space to say, it's hard. I'm going to do it anyway. And there's a community and a network of amazing women around us who are cheering us on. And I think a lot of women don't have that. And when you're surrounded by someone who's saying, yes, I know it's hard, but you can do it anyway, you know, the sky's the limit of the confidence that you start to get because you're like, listen, even if I fail, so what? Other people have walked this journey too.
Gosh, that's so wonderful. Thank you for saying yes to that first, that first experience when your friend was like, hey, come over, I'm going to interview you about this thing in your life, you know? And, you know, because that, you taking that courage, you really pushing through has opened up so many doors and it allowed you to, you know, connect with so many other females that were going through this. And so that took a lot of courage. So if no one has told you that, which I'm sure people have, thank I just you. Want to thank you for that because it takes a lot of courage to do. And, you know, not only are you now an author, you've written several books now. You have a podcast, you have these events, you have your law firm, and you have all these things. So you, at one point I read that you said you're a serial entrepreneur. Now, how did you get the courage to do all of these things in the midst of all the life stuff happening? Because I think that's a big component of a lot of people who I work with are accidental entrepreneurs and they kind of stumble into this world and they're wearing a lot of hats. So how did you kind of combine it all and have this life integration in being an entrepreneur?
I think that, you know, like so many of us, we're entrepreneurs. We have like our childhood entrepreneur story. And for me, it was my neighbor taught swim lessons next door. And I thought to myself, well, there's all these moms coming and going every single Saturday and Sunday. What if I stand at the end of her driveway and hand out flyers to be a babysitter? And then when I started getting babysitting jobs, I'm like, I don't have enough time. Let me get my friends to do these jobs and create, like, I was creating a little business before I even knew what I was doing.
That's
so
incredible.
It's always been in me. But what usually happens with lawyers, they go to law school to be a lawyer and that's it. And they're not entrepreneurs and they're not business owners. But for me, it was like the lawyer was the thing that I did, but I still always loved the concept of marketing, of making a business stand out in a crowd. Like if you look at any lawyer's website, they're all the same. They have like the person standing behind a stack of like books from the 1960s because no one uses them anymore. And so it was like, how can I stand out in a different way? So that was always really fun for me because I've always been a creative. And so that allowed me to tap in because listen, law school sucks the creativity out of you. So being a business owner allowed me to have to instill some of that creativity again. And for a really long time, Amanda, it was just that. It was just the law firm. It wasn't all of these other things. And that all of the other stuff came as a progression of, okay, I've done this. I've sort of built it where I want it to be. Now what? And I kept asking, like, now what? Is this the end? Is this all I'll be doing? And I realized I didn't want that. So it was like, what do I love doing? I love writing. So let me see how I can fit that in. What else do I love doing? I love speaking. Let me see how I can fit that in. Like event planning. I love in-person stuff. And I mean, in between all of that, I created a tech company, which I don't even talk about that much, but for tarot card readers, which is totally like outside of what I do, how people see me, but I'm behind the scenes for that. And I have a co-founder who's the face of it. So I'm doing all the fun stuff for the marketing behind. So it's always like about a challenge. And for that, it was, I knew nothing about the tech world. I didn't know how to launch one, and so that was education, and I loved school. So I'm like, let me read all the books on how to launch a tech company into the world. So for me, it's like when I get bored, I know that it's time to change things up. And as long as I'm like excited and I feel like I'm learning, I want to pursue it. I want to keep going. And for a really long time, I was in that kind of boredom space with just the law firm. And I think COVID really shook things up because you had so much time and you were home. And I kept saying, well, now what? What's next? What's next? If I lose the law firm, what's next?
That's a really good way of looking at it. And so many people have a lot of ideas. A lot of people listening, they consider themselves multi-passionate. And so the idea of focusing on one thing is often very difficult. But what I love that you just shared was that you allowed yourself the curiosity, and then you just decided, instead of something being difficult, like, I don't know this, I'm going to learn about it. And that is a huge differentiating factor with you, I would say, is that so many people look at something that's difficult and see it as such a challenge and it is a difficult way, but you're looking at it as, how can I learn more about this? Have you always been that way?
No, I don't think so. I think that for a really long time, I was a perfectionist, and I always thought that if I couldn't do it perfectly, I wasn't going to do it at all. And then I started, I don't even know what the shift was. I probably would say the shift was actually speaking about my divorce, because now I was putting myself out there in an imperfect way. And I was pointing out, like, yeah, I have this history of relationships that didn't work, and I'm going to speak about them. And so when I started to like peel that layer back and started to show up in a more vulnerable way, then I realized that I can fail in other ways too. It's not a big deal. And I can start a business and have it fail, and okay, or I can try some new marketing thing, which I'm sure I've done all of them and have some of them fail, and it's not a big deal. And so then it's like, in the book story, I think probably really gave me some of that grit, is because I was rejected from 113 literary agents before I got the yes.
Oh my gosh.
So like that's 113 emails that came into my inbox that said, no thanks. And so probably the first 50 I took really personally. And then you start to realize like, okay, it's not a right fit. And when I landed on the agent that I have, I mean, she can't be more perfect. And when we landed on the publisher, that publisher couldn't have been more perfect for me. So it was like those rejections are just moments of redirection and to pivot into what is meant to be. And so rejection doesn't scare me anymore. I just realize like now if the rejection comes in, it's like, okay, that wasn't the path. That wasn't the journey. That's not the time. So it will fall into place. And it's having that faith about that.
Oh my gosh. I know so many people just needed to hear that. So thank you for, again, being so open with your story. 113 no's. And there's probably some that you didn't hear back from.
Oh, yeah.
As well. So there's even more. Like, so I just need everyone to listen and go back and hear that. You at least sent 113 emails to people, but probably way more than that, and heard back and did not stop. What kept you going? Because I know now we know that you got the literary agent and the book deal, but at that time when you were sending those emails and getting those rejections, what kept you going?
It was a passion that, so I've always been a writer and I knew I wanted it. So I had other books out. So I had one that was a hybrid deal, and I had one that was self-published, and one that was a really small press that was in my state. But they were different books. Like they were a guide for divorce, and one was a children's book, and one was a guide for law firm owners. So this was different. And I really wanted the traditional deal. Like I was so stubborn about it. And I just knew that it had a place, and I knew that I wanted to write, and I knew this, I had to wait it out. I knew that, that I could see it as like a multiple book. And in order to have that happen, I had to at least get that first one. And And I had nothing to lose because it was like, all right, it's not, you know, in the nonfiction world, you don't write the book until you get the deal. So I'm like, well, what do I have to lose? I don't have much time anyway. So, all right, let me just keep sending this out there until it lands. And then when we got it, I had to write the book in 4 months. And it was like, okay, it's go time. But the funny thing about that is, had I got that deal when I really wanted it, which was like 3 years prior, it would not have been the same book. I wasn't ready to write the book I wrote. I wasn't ready to be as vulnerable or even share some of the stories that I share in there that I thought were all like done, healed and unpacked and they came up again. I'm like, ooh, where'd that come from? And had I not gone through that journey for the past 3 years of just being more vulnerable and showing up, I probably would have written that book in a very, in kind of a protected way. I wouldn't have laid it all out there like I did.
Oh, that's great. What a great perspective. And again, you know, it's easier, I would say, to see that once we're through it. And so you're able to look back and say, gosh, what a great thing it was that I didn't get the book deal 3 years before. But I'm certain that there were times in that 3 year period that you were like starting to doubt a lot of things. And that's where, you know, I mean, you work with entrepreneurs as well. And you know this, that we get in when we're in that space of nothing is freaking working. Oh my gosh, it's not working. I don't know about you, so I'll just say for myself, that is when the self-doubt really hits hard. And so even when we have the desire, you had a really strong why. I wanted to do this, so I kept going. How did you navigate any of the self-doubt that came up during that time?
I think it would be foolish and naive for me to be like, I didn't have any self-doubt. That's just a bunch of BS. Because anyone who's in this space and is trying anything new and is putting themselves out there is filled with self-doubt and right. Imposter syndrome pops up. And so I recognized what it was. And I knew that the self-doubt was just my head talking and trying to keep me kind of protected and safe. And that the purpose was bigger than that. So I would kind of acknowledge it and be like, okay, like I see you. Like I see you from when I was, you know, 15 years old and bullied in high school. Like I see you. Like there's no place for you in my life right now. And so it was like you kind of push through. And sometimes you show up and you feel like a total fake. You know, I've had that happen where like I've shown up to speak at things and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, I am not the person for this. I don't know how I'm going to get through this. Like, do they know I'm a phony? Like,
yeah.
I mean, those things happen and you keep pushing through. And the more you do that, like the more you flex that muscle of being uncomfortable, the easier it gets. Because then you start to just shift and be like, all right, so what if I flub it? Like, so what? I'll learn from it and I'll take that and move on to the next thing and apply that lesson from it. And you just realize in the grand scheme of everything, who cares if you fall on your face? Like at the end of your life, who cares? Like, are you going to remember that? You're going to remember whether you went for it or not. If you went for that dream, you're not going to remember all of the little like hiccups and roadblocks along the way.
Right. I mean, there's so many research studies that are done and they'll talk to people in their 90s, 80s or 90s. And all of them say, go for it. Like yeah. All of them say that. And anytime I see any of those research studies pop up, I'm so inspired because it's true. We will remember when we don't go for something and, you know, and we're all going to fail at things when we try, but we have to, I love just how you were like, so what? So what if I mess up on that stage? Like, what's the worst thing that could happen? And sure, there's things that are not fun that we'll experience in life, but we can roll with it and go with it. So speaking of that word roll, you have a framework in your book that I want to hear all about because it has such a fun name and I feel like it kind of goes with what we were just talking about.
So I realized that I was bringing clients through a framework that I didn't even know was a framework at the time. But it was always the same steps that every time someone came and talked to me and they had some sort of doubt or they were trying to figure out what their next move was, and I would break it down for them because I realized someone can't go from a leap of where they are to where some action or what they need to do in order to change something. They couldn't make that big enough leap. So I would break it down and As I was putting together the book, I started to think to myself, how can I put this in a way that's really easy to remember? Because it can be applied to really any crossroads in your life. Anytime you have a dream that you haven't acted on, whether it's leaving a relationship, starting the business, picking up and moving across country, like whatever it is for you, you can apply this. And I was thinking to myself, okay, what common thing does everyone know about without even having to like share? And I was going for a walk and it came to me, and it was back in 1973, the term stop, drop, and roll was coined, and that was meant to extinguish flames from flammable clothing, because apparently that was a thing back then. and I thought, okay, that was meant to put out the fire and put out the light. What if we reverse that and we use it to light up your life? And so every time you reach a decision point where you're like, what do I do next? You can stop, drop, and roll, and you'll always end up winning. So that looks like the first part is stopping and assessing and making sure you're being guided by your intuition, by your heart, by that deeper knowing, that voice that's nagging at you for that thing that you want, and not by your head, because our head's keeping us safe and it's keeping us small and it's going to talk us out of anything. So first identifying what it is that you actually want deep down in your soul. And then the second step is to drop your excuses, because this is where everyone gets hung up. Everyone waits, puts their dreams on hold, and they'll say, I'll do it later when I have more money, when the kids are older, when I lose 10 pounds, like whatever it is, they have excuses that will come up, but we have to acknowledge what that is so we can like kick them to the curb. And then once you do that, you roll into action. And it doesn't have to be taking massive steps. It's taking just rolling, that first step to move you forward to create the momentum. And when you stop, drop, and roll through your decisions, you'll always win, because you're no longer stuck. You're no longer sitting there wondering what if. You're actually knowing that you're going for what you want. You're not letting excuses hold you back. And you're strategically taking action to move forward. And even if the end result doesn't look like what you expect or what you wanted, you're still winning, because you've made some sort of movement. And I always believe that the universe is going to give you exactly what you need, which is sometimes not what we think we want.
Oh my gosh, that is so good. What a great example that is of using something that we all know, like you stop, drop, and roll. Like it is very much in our minds. You know, that's good marketing from the 1970s, I guess.
I had to use it recently myself. I was like, you know, I talked the talk, and then I had something come up, and it was actually about exiting my law firm and about selling it. And I was kind of at this weird place where it was like, do I make the move? Do I not? And I had this opportunity present itself, and I almost held myself back, and I had to walk myself through the whole thing. I'm like, I hate when my words get thrown back at me. And it really gave me the clarity on what I needed to do by just going through that. And like so many other people, I got stuck at the excuses. That was what was preventing me from taking that next step and that action.
Oh my gosh, yes. I can raise both hands and all things and say, absolutely, it's always that. Hey there. I promise I'll get you right back to this great episode, but I wanted to pop in and make sure that you knew that my book, Why Not You? An Accidental Entrepreneur's Guide to Success, is published and waiting for you. I wrote this book for anyone who feels like they are stumbling into entrepreneurship and has more questions and doubts than you have answers. While you can find answers to most things you want to learn through a simple Google search, those search results are not going to tell you what you want and how you work best. This book helps you explore what you truly want as an entrepreneur so that you can build a business that integrates into your life instead of taking it over. We explore your desires, your strengths, and I help you create what I call your YOU promise. And this will serve as your compass throughout entrepreneurship. It's a book filled with inspiration and very tactical tips that you can take right now, and I can't wait for you to get your hands on it. So go search for it wherever you shop for books, or you can even request it from your local library. Okay, I can't wait to see it in your hands, but let's get back to the episode. You know, I would say I can get stopped in the excuses, but I don't know about you, but this is definitely me, is that for me, it's actually very hard for me to stop, to pause, because I am just going, right? And so easily it is for me to just keep going and keep the momentum going with whatever it is. How in the world do you encourage yourself to actually stop?
Amanda, I'm exactly like you. I am that person who will fill my calendar with nonstop stuff that actually doesn't move the needle. And I realized that I was doing that. So I have, this is something that I'm practicing now. I'm still kind of a student of it, is creating that space and that time in order to have step back and look at things from kind of a high level. I've gone to the when it's so bad, like I'll go to a sound healing class because it forces me for an hour and a half to sit right there and turn my brain off. And I actually walk out with more clarity and haven't actually thought. Like it was an hour and a half of my brain kind of going to sleep as much as it can. But then I get in my car and I'm like, oh, that's the solution. And so I realize like those moments are the moments that I actually have more clarity and more of a vision and I can see the big picture, but I have to force myself to take that time. And there will be weeks will go by that I don't do it. And I can feel it though. Like I can feel it in my body. And I'm like, okay, now is the time. Yesterday was kind of a really crazy busy day. And I had about 15 minutes in between podcasts and I sat down and I just closed my eyes and meditated for 15 minutes and just quiet. Now, I'm not a great meditator. Like my brain still goes, but it quieted things for a moment and at least kind of calmed me and grounded me and centered me. So I'm much better at recognizing those moments when I need some quiet and then, and you know, it's still a practice.
Yes. Same here. And people laugh all the time because I say, I actually have to put it on the calendar as a to-do list. For like as part of my to-do list, it is go for the walk, meditate, yeah, pause. I have to put it on the calendar. It sounds so ridiculous.
No, you know what I love about putting it on the calendar though? You can cross it off when you do it.
Yes. Yes, it's exactly it. And you know what? People laugh all the time when I say that because it sounds silly to so many people. And I, in turn, whenever someone does that, I'm like, just know that it's a gift. If you don't have to put it on your calendar, that is a gift. If you find it easy to pause and have those moments, like not everyone has that gift because I don't have it.
I know. I think a lot of entrepreneurs don't have that gift. Like it's just, we're built to like keep going and keep chasing this shiny new object and not slow down.
Right. But then we need to, and then the pausing is like that stopping moment and you're really taking an inventory and the dropping of the excuses. Oh my gosh. Have you found that it is helpful to talk through something like with someone else, or are you able to do that like on your own?
Both. Sometimes I can work through things on my own. Sometimes like my husband is a great resource, because he works in the law firm with me. He's like part of this world. And so I can usually talk something through him, but sometimes even what he says isn't helpful. And sometimes I have like just really good girlfriends. I'd be like, can I just bounce something off of you? Mm-hmm. And that works. So it depends on what it is. I did find, anytime I start crowdsourcing for information or like people's opinions, that's when I need to like slow my roll and not do that. Because then it was like, for example, the subtitle of my book, I could not decide what it was going to be. And I think I must have asked like 50 people and I got 50 different responses and everyone had their own opinions. And I'm like, you know what? I need to like lower all of this chatter and all of the noise and just sit with this for a second. And that's how I did it. And so sometimes it's like when you ask too many people, you really muddy the waters and you just need to pay attention to your own internal voice.
Yeah, gosh, that's a good point. You know, there's times when I was just thinking as you were talking that I need to talk things out because then I'll have, let's say, who I call my biz besties, you know, other entrepreneurs who are understanding of what's going on. And I'll talk to them and I can like see their face and they're like, but Amanda, hold up. Like, and I can actually see that they're calling me out on something on that excuse. And that's really helpful. Whereas there's other times like you're talking about, like when I was working on my book, I remember thinking, gosh, I should have so many people be beta readers. And I did have beta readers and they were wonderful and it was super helpful, but I had to make that pool small because otherwise, gosh, I'd still be editing the dang thing because it's so many people.
And I mean, and if you look at any book and pull up the reviews, you have Atomic Habits behind you, right? It's like one of the best-selling books of all time. Right. It's on every bestseller list every week. So obviously people love this book, and there will still be reviews that are really bad. So It's like everyone has an opinion. So at some point we have to just shut off like asking for other people's opinions, because then you start to doubt yourself.
Yeah. And it leads right back to what we were talking about earlier, that self-doubt. We think, gosh, you know, whatever it is, if it's a new offering, if it's our website, if it's whatever we're doing in our business, it's like we will doubt that because it's not going to make everyone happy. And we really have to, I think that's one of the hardest things, especially if someone's a people pleaser, that's a really difficult thing to do as an entrepreneur, is understand fully that our job is to attract the right customer for us and repel the wrong one. Not that there's right or wrong people, it's just the right one to work with us or not. Like, we have to do that, and that is so uncomfortable. Have you found that?
Oh my God, so much. And I had a number of years back had changed the name of my law firm from, it was Bauer Law Group, very typical law firm, to Happy Even After Family Law. And when I did that, the feedback was so polarized. We had people, the old time lawyers, who called up and kind of laughed, and they're like, what kind of name is that? And then we had people who came and said, I loved your name and I loved the message. And I realized it wasn't for anyone else, but it was so we could attract the right type of clients that we want to work with. And that's what happened. And so, yeah, it's, you know, it absolutely, you're going to fill yourself with doubt if you ask too many people. And it definitely happens. And like, you think about, you have to act from a place of intuition and what feels good to you and what you know is aligned, and not just because you're worried about what other people are going to say about it.
Gosh, that is the thing. And I don't know if you know this, but I changed my podcast name as well. So just like you changed your law firm name, like, it's interesting how us entrepreneurs, we change over time and things change with us. And I love that. And so my podcast name is The Unapologetic Entrepreneur, obviously, but it wasn't that before. But my moment was, I wanted to help entrepreneurs be very similar to your message of being unapologetically them and doing things that work for them. So that is something that has just been a constant message, which clearly you agree with. It's like, mm-hmm. How can we show up in the way that makes us happy, that gives us the life that we want? And sometimes it's changing the name of something and knowing some people aren't going to like it. It's just going to be that way.
Yeah. And sometimes it's letting go of employees who are no longer aligned or have your vision. Sometimes it's having those hard conversations. I mean, there's so many things as an entrepreneur in those decisions. And at the end of the day, it's like, it's our business. We built it for a reason, and we have to run it in a way that feels really good to us. And the minute that we try to start doing it the way everyone says we're supposed to do it, or the way that someone should, you know, on us, that we should be doing it this way, is the minute that we lose probably where the passion comes from, because we're an entrepreneur because we want to shake things up. We don't want to just check in from 9 to 5. We want to work 80 hours a week instead, you know?
Exactly. But exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things that you talk about in your book, and you've said it a few times today, which I just love so much, is you have this phrase of winning in life. And so I would love to know what winning in life feels like for you.
It's waking up every single day and doing the work and having the conversations and being connected to people who I want in my life or who challenge me, and conversations like these. And I've, you know, the term connectedness has never been more relevant as it feels right now in the season that I'm in. It's like, if it doesn't feel connected to me, I don't want to do it. And so winning means everything that I do is so connected to someone on the other side, or the creativity, or just really, really feeling good. And that's a winning that you can't lose when you're connecting with people and doing what you love.
I love that. So you probably don't know this, but when I went on my book writing journey, I realized, and this was before I started writing the book, I didn't even know it was going to happen. I realized that I had made my definition of success. It was my goals. So every goal was how I was defining success, which constantly made me move the marker. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I had this moment where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm treating these things as the same. What does success feel like for me? So then I go on this whole journey of asking a ton of people about their definition of success, which is interesting because it's like, why was I asking other people when I needed to be asking myself? So anyways, I go on this whole journey of this. And don't you know that people do not define success on their own? Most likely, it's just something that we don't do. And so when I came across you and how you say you can win at life and this is how I win at life, I thought, oh my gosh, she did it. She asked herself, what does success feel like? You use the term winning, but I loved it so much. And I love that you know what it feels like for you, because that's one of the soapboxes I want to stand on forever is like, I want everyone to understand what that feels like for them. Because otherwise, we will follow what everyone else says. Did you do that?
You know what? It's funny because you're talking about that, and you're like, oh, you figured it out. I have not. Because like just being like, because I'm in the book launch mode right now. You think about it from that perspective. Everyone has this thought of what a successful book launch looks like, and it's about making some list and selling a certain number. And I, for a while, I went down that hole and I was like, how do I get on the list? How do I sell the certain number? And then I realized I have friends who did make the list and they were so burnt out, and by the end, they hated their book. They didn't want to talk about it. And I'm like, I do not want to go through this launch that way. I'm like, I wrote the book out of a place of joy because that's what I love doing. And I do not want to come out the other side of this hating it or burnt out or disappointed because it didn't make some sort of list. I'm like, what was the goal? The goal was to put it in hands of women who I know that it could impact their lives. And as I have like advanced reader copies out there and comments and reviews are slowly coming in, I'm like, this is why. So who cares if it didn't get, you know, the 6,000 copies on week one to hit the list? What if it landed in the hands of 500 women and it changed their life? Isn't that more impactful? So I've had to totally change that perspective of what a successful book launch looks like. And that was not easy to do. It was, you know, it happened over time. It wasn't just a switch was flipped. It took like some work and some conversations and to get there.
Oh my gosh. I am with you 100%, Renee. Like I'm sitting here thinking, oh my gosh, like a book launch is such an interesting thing. I don't know about you, but I've launched a lot of things, my business, podcast, different offerings in my business. You have too. A book feels different. It feels very, very different. And all of a sudden, and this is the first moment I'm really realizing, it's like these lists came out of nowhere. Like I'm just now having this moment live here, right in this moment of someone just decided that the list exists one day. And then like, why don't we create our own dang list? Like,
I know, right?
You know,
and I know. the top in almost female centric books to empower you. And you know what makes me crazy about the lists, or we can go off on a tangent about this, but New York Times is editorial, so there's no way of knowing how books make that list. A lot of it's like kind of political. And then the other lists are number of sales, and you see people buying mass amounts of books for themselves to make a list. And how disingenuous is that too? Right. So it isn't even a real true indicator of how good the book is or what the real reach is, because you have these kind of game in the system to get there. So that was kind of the conversation I had to have with myself. It's like, why then? Why does it matter? Like, yeah, it's pretty cool if you get on one organically, you know, but to try to like just hustle so hard just to make like a vanity metrics list, what's the point?
Right. And I feel like we can fall into that bucket in so many areas of life with these, you said the term vanity metric. Like, I feel like we can do that on Instagram. Like, before everyone had the ability to have links, it was 10,000. You had to have 10,000 followers before you had the swipe up feature. And it was like, everyone was like buying followers to get that feature. I'm very thankful that they did away with that. But still, there's a number that people are trying to chase, whether it's on YouTube or Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn or whatever. And then podcast downloads, like we can really get caught up in these numbers.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point, the podcast downloads, because everyone uses the metrics and they flash those numbers around. And so it's easy to get into that comparison game.
It is. But I love what you said about the going back to what's the intention. And it's interesting because typically speaking with people that I work with and you as well, we're trying to impact lives. You know, that's what we're really trying to do. I mean, we're running a business. So we're all obviously focused on the numbers as well. We're trying to do things in a way, but that feels right. And we're trying to impact lives. So if we can have a product, a service that impacts five people's lives in this year, and that ripple effect impacts so many people. So again, I know we need to focus on the numbers because it's a business, but to really take it back down to that, like, who gives a rip if you're on a list of something, yeah, whether it's for a book or something else, it's like, look at the people's names that have bought your thing. Like, that's a better list to look at.
Absolutely. It's, you know, and I have the few like book reviews or people would post from a page in the book and stuff. Like, each time it made me extremely emotional because I'm like, this is the reason.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with that back end in the industry standard. It's this, it's the one person who sat there with that page.
Gosh, you're right. I'm seeing pictures of my book starting to come through as people are getting it, and it's so amazing. And even before the book, when I would get emails from clients or whatever the case may be, I created a smile file on my computer and I just screenshot everything that I see that's nice. Because
I love that.
We have, you know, all of us have bad days. We've talked about it several times. Like, there's going to be days of self-doubt. And so, I mean, I have a file of screenshots that I can look at on those days, because otherwise I would just put myself in a tizzy.
I love that. I'm going to do the same thing. That's amazing. Like, I'll save them and they'll just be randomly in my phone, so I don't have like them in one place. That's brilliant.
Yes. Put them in one place. I can't take credit for it. Someone else said it at some point, and I was like, that is a genius idea. And so I have just this, what's called the smile file, and I can look at it. And you know what I've actually done is that every Monday, so the first thing I do on Monday mornings, well, I should say sometimes it's not the first, because I usually tackle the hardest thing first, but usually early in the morning on Monday mornings when I'm starting my work week, I look at one thing in that smile file. Like, I start my week with something kind that someone has said to me, because otherwise those tough moments are the ones that come up. So if you get that email that hurts, or that someone's not happy with something, you read the bad book review, whatever it is, it's like, gosh, we'll remember those. But we need to remember the nice things that people said, because there's usually more.
Yeah. And we always focus on the critiques and criticisms. And it's what we do as humans.
Right. I mean, we always do that. So we have to make sure that we're being proactive. At least for me, I have to be proactive or I'll just spiral in those moments. Renee, thank you so much for sharing all of this. Thank you so much for being here today. And as we're sitting here and we're wrapping up, I want you to leave everyone with, of course, where they can find you online, but also if someone is listening today and they are doubting themselves and whatever it is in their life, what would you share with them?
I would say that even when something's really hard, if you want it, then go for it. And know that it could get harder before it gets easier. And even if you fail, you at least know that you tried. And at some point in your life, you can look back and say, I went for it. And maybe it works out. And maybe that turns into something even bigger. So I would say absolutely go for it. But I would also love to offer your listeners, because I love supporting other authors. So anyone who's listening here and who would love a copy of Amanda's book and my book, I would love to gift 5 copies to listeners. So if you guys are listening to this, just hop on over to Instagram. My handle is at Ms. Renee Bauer. Just shoot me a DM and tell me you listen to this, and I will send you a copy of both of our books.
I love that so very much, Renee. Thank you for being so kind and doing this book bundle. That seems like so much fun. I can't wait. So make sure everyone go and hang out with Renee on Instagram, because first five people, I mean, it's first come, first serve over here. And be sure to tag me so I can also share in the love as well. So thank you, Renee, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Renee is such an inspiration, and I just want to tell you how amazing and fantastic her book is. So if you are interested, make sure to head on over to Amazon, Bookshop, any place books are sold, basically, and go grab your copy. And if you're listening live, don't forget, Renee said she is giving away a book bundle of her book and my book. How fun is that? My gosh, I cannot wait to now interview someone who's an author so I can do this as well. What a sweet gift this is. So the first five people who send her a message, say you listen to this episode, tell her your favorite takeaway message or whatever you want to do, and send her this message, and the first five people will get a copy of her book and my book. Her Instagram handle is at Ms. Renee Bauer. So it's MsReneeBauer. So go check her out on Instagram, follow her, of course, but send her a message and win a copy of her books. But even more, I hope you're inspired to win at whatever you're pursuing at the moment or whatever you're thinking of pursuing. So I want to leave you with Renee's words, because it was so beautiful how she said this, and I want you to go after whatever it is that your heart desires. So Renee said this, "Even when something is really hard, if you want it, go for it. Know that it could get hard before it gets easier, but at least you tried." I believe this so much, and it's evident in her story that she believes this, because she talked about falling down, and I talk about this all the time. We're going to fail. We're going to fall down. We're going to miss the mark more times than we really think that we will, right? More times than we succeed, we're going to be failing, but it's the lessons in the failing that we can then apply, and the successes are so much sweeter. So go after whatever it is that your heart desires right now. And until next time, give yourself permission to go after the things you want and grace along the way. I'll talk to you soon.